and welcome to the CTS NetBeat podcast. This week, in full flow, we're going to talk about what makes the world's best center. We're going to visit a few in this year, and we visited one last year, so I'm going to give you my thoughts on that. Also, we've got loads of papers and some amazing videos. It's a really hot week this week. There's a great paper on what is the best prosthesis choice for the under 50s in AVR. Reimplantation versus remodeling, a meta-analysis, and an amazing randomized controlled trial on non-intubated thoracic surgery versus intubated. There are some really good videos this week. We've got the 9 suture technique for AVR. Have you ever used just 9 sutures? This guy does it routinely. Hybrid management of AF with Patrick Myers, and a whole lot more, and a few events to go as well. So tune in for the full podcast with me, Joel Dunning. Hi, and welcome to the CTS NetBeat podcast. My name's Joel Dunning, where we get to go through all the news around the world in cardiothoracic surgery. We've also got a new slot called Full Flow, and I'm going to get into Full Flow about a topic every single week. And this week, I thought it would be very appropriate to talk about what makes the world's best center. The reason I'm doing this is because we have visited what we thought was the world's best center, and we're going to start visiting world's best centers. Just to give you a flavor of what makes them so great. So obviously we started it in November by going to the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio, voted 29 years running by US News as the world's best center. So it really was a fantastic experience. We were so lucky to be welcomed by Faisal Bakin and so many others. And we're going to post some of these videos over the coming weeks. Lars Svensson also did a brilliant interview with us, and we saw one of his valve sparing root replacements. So my thoughts, because we're going to go to some other centres. You can't all be the world's best centres, so it's just going to be a series about examples of what makes them the world's best. We're going to try some other US centres, but we're also going to try some non-US centres. On our thoughts are the Narayana Hospital in India. What an incredible place. I actually visited a couple of years ago. Devi Shetty, what a phenomenal person, transformed that place to be not only, I'm sure, is the best centre in India, I mean, not without a doubt, but also one of the world's cheapest, which is so important for the patients of India. $1,000 for a CABG. I mean, that is just incredible. There are some incredible hospitals in Beijing. I'd love to go to Professor Sun's unit. He does 5,000 cases a year there. And obviously, I have visited the world's best thoracic surgery center, the Shanghai Pulmonary Center, now doing an insane 25,000 lobectomies per year there. And we'd love to hear from you. Where else should we go? We've been thinking about somewhere in Europe, maybe Leipzig. What a great place. If you go to EACTS every year, the Techno College is taken over by Leipzig to give us examples. So what makes the world's best center? Well, here's some thoughts. Well, firstly, I was struck by how well the surgeons get on in every single one of these places. It really is quite impressive. I've been to some world not best centers, I can tell you. And, you know, that is something that stands out. As you walk the corridors, the surgeons say hi to each other. They talk to each other. They say, hey, Joel's here. Hey, come over here, have a chat. You know, this guy's incredible. He's amazing. So number one on my list of what makes a world best center is a center that gets on incredibly well. Number two in my world's best center is just volume. You know, I really can't think of a center I've been to that's tiny. You know, every center that's phenomenal is phenomenally big, and with size comes quality. And I try to think about what is it about the size that makes quality. And really, it's just doing it again and again and again. If you do things so many times, you're going to get so good at it. I visited Bob Cifolio in Birmingham, Alabama, and I visited him at NYU Langone. And again, he just has such huge volume, and his team are doing things 9, 10, 11 times just in a day. And he's operating 4 days a week, and his team knows exactly how he thinks, he knows exactly how his team thinks. So I think volume is so important, and it's difficult, isn't it? So you're sitting there going, well, I'm in a center that's the size it is. But actually, you know, it's just an immutable fact that the more cases you do, the bigger you get, the better you're going to be. And again, when I go to these world's best centres, I met Nick Smadira. He's a myectomy surgeon. You know, how crazy is that? He's done 2,000 myectomies. You know, that's one of the most common operations he's done. And then, and yet for the average thoracic and cardiac surgeon, you know, how many do you do? 10 a year, 5 a year, 2 a year, 1 a year? So actually, when you become big, you can super specialise and become absolutely fabulous at what you do. Number three is your staff. Now, if you've got an amazing centre and you're the world's best, your staff feel like they're the world's best. And some of the world's best centres told me, well, it's amazing because our nurse practitioners are the world's best, our nurses are the world's best, our physiotherapists are the world's best, because it attracts professors of physiotherapy, professors of nursing. And I was just off the phone to the Mayo Clinic because we're going to go and see them. And I heard a great story from there because a proper professional team went there to do some filming. And one of the editors just bobbed their head into a room and said, hi, what are you doing? And the lady there said, I'm saving lives. And he said, yeah, but you look like you're cleaning. And she said, yes, I am a cleaner, but I save lives. And he goes, well, how's that? He said, well, if I don't do my job to the absolute best of my ability in this hospital, then the next patient that comes into this room is going to get an infection and they're going to die of that infection. So if I don't do my job to the best of my abilities, people are going to die. So at the moment, right now, I'm saving lives by doing my cleaning to the best that I can do. Now, that's a great story in itself, but it shows that the ethos of that unit has gone from the top to the very bottom, from the professor of surgery to the cleaners, that everybody wants to be the best. Again, when I went to see Bob Sofolio, there was a guy cleaning the floor as quick as he could because he knew that there needed to be another patient coming in really, really fast. And we met him and Bob berated him because he wasn't actually going fast enough. And so the guy went faster. So that is my other observation in World's Best Units, that the teams work as though they are part of the machine, because they are. You can't do these things on your own without help. And these World's Best Centres make sure they've got the world's best staff and that they're engaged as well. That's maybe a final thought, is the engagement. When I go around these centres, the nurses are enthused, the physios are enthused, the receptionists are enthused, the PR teams are enthused. They all are so proud of their units. So maybe what have I brought back to our unit? Well, we're trying to get bigger. I really try and enthuse our staff. I try to bring my nurses to the ward the day after surgery to meet the patients. I try and say hello to our cleaning staff and tell them what I've done in my operations that day. And it makes them proud because they've, in a small way, been a part of that cog. So, they're my thoughts. As I say, look out for our World's Best series. We're going to start with an intro video and then Lars Svensson doing some operations, Faisal Bikin, Nick Smadira, Soltes, you know, some World's Bests. And then we are going to go out to do other World's Bests. As a warning, let's not get too hung up on the word world's best. I'm just going out there to look for examples. So you know, we're not going to be saying this is better than others or worse than others, but we're going to try and go to these big centres that have got hints and tips for us all. So let me know what you think about this as an idea. And that was my full flow thought for the day. So what else is on CTSNet this week? Well, we've got some three great papers. The first paper I thought was really interesting was aortic valve prosthesis choice in patients less than 50 years old. This is by the Austrian Heart Visit Registry. It's 10-year results by Dr. Traxler, Dr. Mildner, and many, many others. They took the social insurance register in Austria from 2010 to 2020, which is a very big registry. They got around 1,000 patients under 50 having an aortic valve replacement, and they looked very carefully at whether they had a mechanical valve or a biological valve. They did Cox regression and paired analysis to make sure it isn't just druggies getting the biological valves. They've flattened all the playing fields, and they've done an average follow-up of 6 years. And what did they find? Well, they found that that if you had a bioprosthesis compared to a mechanical heart valve, you had a significantly higher rate of reoperation. And you had a reduced reoperation-free survival. Didn't quite get to overall survival, but remember, it's just 1,000 patients, so maybe it will tend towards that. If you're having more operations and operation-free survival, you know, I think that's tending towards getting a mechanical valve. And that was in my my rant or my full flow a couple of weeks ago, that why don't we stand up more for the mechanical valve? You know, that is, it's such a long-lasting thing. We're so good at anticoagulation control these days. And this study showed that there wasn't extra bleeding in the mechanical valve patients. So, you know, let's stand up for the mechanical valve. And here's a paper that really does that. Second paper is by Michael Pompeo and several others, Ibrahim Sultan and several others, and they've just done a meta-analysis. The meta-analysis called Valve-Sparing Root Replacement with Reimplantation versus Remodeling. To you and me, it's the David versus the Yacoub procedure for a dilated aortic root. So obviously, if you've been on this planet ever in the last 30 years, you have heard many raging wars over the David 1-2-3-4 and the Yacoub technique and other valve-sparing root replacement techniques. But this goes out and looks at the papers showing direct comparison between the two. So it's looking at the Yacoub remodeling versus David reimplantation, and they pull it as a meta-analysis. So they found a total of 3,044 patients, so nearly 2,000 in reimplantation and 2,000 in remodeling, nicely balanced, which is really good. And they found 15 studies. So what were the answers? Well, drum roll. The Yacoub did not do as well as the David procedure. So the hazard ratio for all cause of death is 1.5, which was significant, p-value 0.002. So that was all-cause death. Survival was a little bit longer in the David procedure, and reintervention was higher in the remodeling. So in summary, they said reimplantation is associated with a better overall survival and a lower risk of needing reintervention. So, and that was up to 4 years in most of those studies or so. So I thought that was interesting. The third paper, fascinating and absolutely brilliant, coming out of China. It couldn't have come from anywhere else. It's a randomized trial of non-intubated thoracic surgery. I've actually been desperate to do a non-intubated lobectomy for about 5 years since I've seen some of these operations on the websites, but no Brits will damn well agree to stay awake. But in many societies, going to sleep is loss of control. It's very feared, you know, in Turkey, I've heard, and in Asia, certainly people have a strong preference to stay awake for their own benefit. And actually, that's how it grew up. And this is now a randomized trial in this, which I thought was fascinating. So they got 110 patients, so over 50 in each group. They looked at some cerebral oxygenation and neuroinflammatory markers, interleukin 6 and some others, and also clinical outcomes. So the clinical outcome is non-intubated patients had a higher neurocognitive scores at 24 hours and at 6 months, and there was a significant p-value with that, and they had higher cerebral oxygenation, and the mechanism of this maybe is because you're much more gentle on the other lung when you're non-intubated, because you're breathing yourself, there's not big airway pressure, so it does, just, you know, there's some logic to it, and in conclusion, it's associated with improved neurocognitive recovery, more stable intraoperative cerebral oxygenation, and the inflammatory markers were better too. So fascinating. I can't persuade any of my patients to have one, but I would love to try it. But a really great randomized trial in that. So I'm going to hand you over to the CTSNet office now, and they'll tell you what else is available on the website today.
Are you following CTSNet on social media? If not, check us out on Twitter at CTSNet.org and Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook at CTSNet for the latest clinical videos, surgeon interviews, industry webinars, and more. We want to hear from you too. Make sure to comment, reply, and retweet to engage with the vibrant CTSNet community. See you online.
So we've got three great videos for you this week. Now, the first one's absolutely a must watch for those of you doing aortic valve replacements. So the fabulous Stephen Spindell, we did some other interviews with him, some aortic hemiarch surgery, etc. And I love him. And at the end of the chat with him, he said, hey, I got this great technique about doing AVRs with only 9 sutures. And I was like, how do you do that? He said, well, you leave as many spaces as the stitches. So all of us normally put each horizontal mattress right next to each other, don't we? But he says, no, space them out. So the space in the middle is as big as the sutures. I've been doing it for years. It's absolutely great. And I just didn't believe him. So I said, send us a video. I really want to see this. And he did. And it's phenomenal. And what a great idea. It's just a lot quicker. He actually says, don't use pledgets mostly as well. They're all spaced out really nicely. He likens it to the hub of a car wheel, distributing the load evenly throughout, do a really good decalcification, and it's just worked for years in his practice, and it's really fast. It's really one of those things you've got to see to believe, but once you see it, you'll believe it. So check out the video, and thank you very much, Stephen Spindell, for submitting this absolute banger of something that I never expected I would see. The second video is also really great. I'm really excited to have it because this is from Professor Tristan Yan from the Royal Prince Alfred in Australia. And it's actually kicking off a series that he's done with CTSNet. So this is a day in the life of him at his hospital. But after that, we're going to do a series with him, firstly of his exact off-pump techniques. And he's got a really wonderful, gentle, total arterial, no-touch aortic technique. Really good. Does loads of side-to-side anastomosis. Has a really different technique for his Lima to LAD that you should really check out. But that's all for the series that's coming up. So if you're an off-pump surgeon, definitely look out for this in the coming weeks. But this video is a day in the life where he does 3 cardiac operations and 3 thoracic operations, 6 procedures in a day through 3 ORs. And actually takes it in a pretty measured fashion. His first operation was a really difficult right pneumonectomy, which takes him all the way till 11:30 before he's done that while they're prepping his first off-pump CABG. And then he does his off-pump CABG in about an hour, takes about 12:30. Then they have a bit of a delay. So he goes off and has lunch. So then it's 1:30 and he does another CABG. And then he does a pleuridesis, a minor VATS operation, while he waits for his third patient to come in who'd had a previous out-of-hospital arrest, was quite a sick CABG patient, but he does that and then finally rounds it off with a lung resection, a VATS lung resection, which I believe was a wedge, all finished at 7:00. And again, we were talking about world's best, and this looked like a great example of a team that was really happy. He says several times how happy his team is and they wish they could do more. And here's me chuckling, going, rubbish, I bet they don't. But actually, I bet they do. I bet they're incentivized to do the operations. And that was something I was told once by one of these centers. You know, they benefit as much as we benefit. Yep, the surgeons are paid per case, but so are the staff, which I really, really support. Make sure everybody wants to do lots of cases. So I genuinely believe Tristan Yan wanted to get through the cases. Your whole system has to support you when you want to be the best. And I think Tristan Yan probably is in one of the best centres, certainly in Australia. And we're going to do many more series with him, including some robotic mitrals and robotic aorta. Then the final video that we have for you is a wonderful interview I was lucky enough to have with Patrick Myers. Patrick Myers is president of CTSNet. He's also Secretary General of EACTS, but also he loves operating. And one of his favourite operations is hybrid AF surgery. So I was lucky enough to have a great chat to him about that. We talked about some EACTS and STS joint guidelines in the surgical treatment of AF that are just coming up. And mainly he said, you know, we should just all be doing hybrid AF surgery for the benefit of patients. He says that whereas in persistent and long-standing AF, the success for just catheter ablation is only about 50%, and they go back for second and third times, whereas if you add surgery in, it's 80-90%. He gave us some great tips. You don't have to both be doing it at the same time. You can do the surgical part on one day, and then the cath lab guys can go and do it another day, or even another admission. It doesn't have to be on the same same day or even a couple of days apart. So there were some great tips. He made it sound really easy, and actually it's a real patient benefit doing hybrid AF surgery. So do check it out and maybe think about giving him a bell or having a go, having a chat with your electrophysiologist sometime. So that's it for this week. I hope you've enjoyed our podcast. We've got a few different camera views, so I hope you like the new fresh look. Just leaves me to go through a few upcoming events. Of course, I'll be going to the Society of Cardiothoracic Surgery next weekend. I might do the podcast from there, in fact. Also, obviously, AATS is on the 27th of April, an absolute not to miss. And the London Core Review course will be coming up just the week before the AATS. So check that out if you're mugging up for some exams. And so that's all for this week. I hope you'd enjoyed it. My name's Joel Dunning, and tune in next week where hopefully I might be in Wales at the Society of Cardiothoracic Surgery meeting in Britain over there. Thank you very much.